JP reads for you. Today, Die Glocke by Kelsey Bone.
Part 5.
Die Glocke is German for the bell, and is the story of the Nazi bell experiments. Come with us on a journey through time, time, time. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Okay, right. Now I can see my mic is live. I was actually... You see, the thing is, the reason I couldn't see the mic BU meters is because I'm wearing these glasses that I can only see very close up with. So when I look up, I can't actually see the BU meters at all. So sorry about that. Big sorry. Anyway, so I'm going to read the next hour's worth. It doesn't look like it's like a huge book, but it seems to be going anyway. Die Glocke, chapter 15. New things that look old. It was late 1944, and the SS wanted to prepare for the launch of the Wunderwaffe, which, according to Hitler, would be in the next 6 months. Not wanting to risk another devastating loss to the Bell program, the scientists came up with a plan to build and fully test a scale model of the bell. A test rig was set up in Complex A. It housed a small-scale functional model of the bell. Seeger wanted to make sure all the control details were fixed and that the full-size unit would work perfectly. It was 3 feet in diameter and about 2 feet in height. A perfect replica of the bell. The new steel shines in the large complex overhead lights. The body is a bronze color with sharply painted black trim. Small, hey guys? Yauto, but it looks identical and brand new, Kurt replies. I'm glad we're protected by this bunker for demonstration. Why? Kurt asks. The last test on a full-scale model went disastrously wrong, Zurich replies. Why? What happened? We don't like to talk about it, Kurt. We lost a friend that night. Sorry to hear that. So do you think this will be safe? Unless they bomb the inside of this bunker, we should be fine. The colonel walks up to the three young men nervously working on the last details. Are we ready yet?
Soon, sir.
Kurt just needs to test his new navigational array, and then we're good to go. Good, I'm waiting for the generals to arrive, so tell me when you're all done and I'll keep them entertained till then.
Where will you be, sir?
The third deck office, the one with the big window. The colonel turns and runs up the flight of stairs. Okay, guys, back to work, Zurich commands. The three work frantically to double and triple check the electronic systems. The phone in Seeger's third floor office is already ringing when he runs through the door. He grabs the receiver. Yes, Seeger here. Colonel, the brass's limousine's just past the first checkpoint, a young private informs him. Thanks. He hangs up the phone and walks out his door to stand on the steel deck, overlooking the work floor.
Hey everyone, the generals will be here any minute. Look your best and get ready to test that thing.
Multiple voices can be heard responding,
Yes, sir.
The colonel returns to his office to wait for the guests to arrive. He sits, nervously twiddling his thumbs. Suddenly, he hears voices.
Mein Führer, Heil Hitler!
He stands and peers out his observatory window. He can't believe what he sees.
Hitler!
Below him, he sees Sporenberg, Kammler, Dr. Eckert, and amongst them, the leader of Germany. His heart pounds, and he must focus himself to deal with the panic that is setting in. The colonel calmly walks out of his office and down the flights of stairs to meet his honored guests. Hitler takes his time, shaking hands with as many troops as he can, asking questions of what they are doing, showing a genuine interest in their tasks. That's the thing about a madman. They very seldom come across as threatening. It gives Seeger enough time to get to the main floor and position himself to greet the Führer. Finally, the moment comes. Hitler stands face to face with him. Shorter than he expected, but Seeger did not let this fool him. He could feel that the presence of the man was giant. "My good Colonel, thank you for your efforts to make Germany victorious." Standing straight and saluting. "Thanks, my Führer." "At ease, Colonel. Now, you must have an isolated place to observe tonight's test from." "Yes, sir. This way." Seeger gestures with his hand and gives way to Hitler and his security detail. The generals and doctor follow. The office is large enough to give Hitler a comfortable view of the complex and the events that are about to occur. "Colonel, tell me about tonight's test schedule."
"Yes, my Führer. We will test the torsion drive at various outputs and the remote control navigational electronics. This will give us proof that the systems for the Bell are operational."
"Good plan. When do we start?"
"Whenever you command, sir."
"Okay, Colonel. Begin."
"Yes, my Führer."
Seeger picks up the mouthpiece for the intercom.
"Everyone start your pre-checks and take your positions. We are T-minus 5 minutes for launch. Kurt, I'll need you to come here and monitor the navigational array."
He looks down and can see the muscular torso of Kurt running across the floor. Seconds later, the kid is standing in the presence of the Führer.
"Yes, Colonel."
"Start up the remote navigation systems and monitor from the station up here."
"Yes, sir."
He scurries off to the nearby cathode ray tube monitoring station. His hands fumble with a headset.
"I'm ready, Colonel."
The 5 minutes to countdown pass quickly. Soon the calling... Soon the Colonel is calling.
10, 9, 8.
The complex floor is alive with activity. For that matter, all the decks are buzzing with movements of white lab coats. The tiny model begins to come to life. The two counter-rotating drums begin to spin in opposite directions, and the sound can be heard by all. Faster and faster they spin with each passing second. The anticipation of the researchers builds and builds. The moment of truth is glorious. The small metal object begins to lift off the deck. It rises to a height of about 2 feet and sits there, silent. The Colonel calls into his radio set.
"Feedback, people. Give me a rundown."
The information comes streaming back to Seeger.
"Field strength 5%. Field potential at 100,000 volts. Zaret Mercury core is stable."
Finally, Kurt radios in.
"Tracking unit on navigational array, sir."
Seeger instructs for the output to be increased to 15%. The model rises and yaws. It floats firmly and steady at 12 feet.
"Still tracking, sir."
Kurt shouts out. "Okay, let's maneuver it through the area to see what control is like." Zurich and Otto can be seen instructing one another with the lever mechanism, designed to remotely fly the unit. The model slowly moves left, then right. They move the model left again, this time holding the joystick further to the left to make the unit respond faster. To all, an unexpected event happens. The unit disappeared and simultaneously appears at the far end of the complex. Otto and Zurich peer skywards to Seeger's position with a shocked look upon their faces. Seeger sees this and responds with an order into the radio set.
"Do that again, but go right."
They do as they're told. Amazingly, it happens again. The model floats at the other end of the complex.
"Did you see that?"
Kamla explains. The Führer answers,
"Yes, of course we did. Seeger, try it with more power."
"Yes, sir."
The Colonel orders the team to increase power and repeat the movement. The model is seen and then it's gone, only to reappear simultaneously somewhere else. The final test is to reposition the tiny Bell in the center of the complex, chain it in place, and apply 100% power. The instructions are followed to a T. The model jerks and fights its constraints as the power is applied. Soon, electrical discharges crackle into the air. The bell begins to glow a shimmering blue, and the eerie green fog begins to magically appear. The Führer stands watching the events unfold. Suddenly, the atmosphere explodes in a flash of light, and the unit was gone. The chains drop freely to the floor.
"Where is it, Colonel?" the Führer asked.
"I'm not sure, sir," shouts a cut.
"Are you still tracking it?"
The young officer's response shocks everybody.
"Yes, sir."
"Where is it?"
"Right there in front of us."
They all look down to see nothing. Seeger shouts out,
"Power down to 20%.
The command is followed. The air begins to spark and flash, and then as quick as it disappeared, the model reappeared. It floats in the position it was before.
"That's enough, Colonel. Stop the test. I want to have a closer look at that thing."
"Yes, sir."
The Colonel does what Hitler tells him to do. The group reconvenes, encircling the model. The effects of the unit's journey can be seen.
"My God, Seeger, that thing looks like it's 100 years old.
The metal looks fatigued and rusted, like it was ready to fall apart.
"It was brand new when we started. I can't explain it."
The doctor interjects a comment.
"A dimensional rift. That's what's caused it."
"Explain,"
Hitler commands.
"I believe the red mercury forms a dimensional rift around the craft. It moves outside of our time-space continuum. That's why it seems to simultaneously disappear and then reappear, like it's at two different places at the same time."
Hitler stands quiet and then says the most startling thing.
"The witches were right."
The Nazi leader says nothing else, just turns and leaves. Only his security personnel follow. The generals chase after him. Only the mad doctor and Seeger are left. They stare and contemplate why something new could look so old. Oceans away in America, whispers of new things that look old fall on the most covert of ears. Two high-ranking U.S. military officers talk of developing war events over a burger and fries at an isolated diner. Deep in the New Mexico desert, on a long, lonely patch of highway, miles from nowhere, sits a tattered coffee house. As the dust blowing in the hot air pounds the warm... Deep in the New Mexico desert, on a long, lonely patch of highway miles from nowhere, sits a tattered coffee house. As the dust blowing in the hot air pounds the wooden walls of his run-down shack, these two covert operatives share secrets. Why here, one may ask? Isolation is the answer to that question. These are the only two men, besides the short order cook, who, by the way, was hard of hearing in the restaurant. Small and dusty is the inside, like it hasn't been properly cleaned in years. Almost as if these two men were the only customers in weeks.
"Exactly what the doctor ordered, hey, Jake?"
"What a dive, Joe.
Don't tell me this is where you want to bring your dates."
"No, I have a better dive for that."
Both laugh as they sit in the furthest booth from the entrance.
"So, tell me, Joe, why we're so far from civilization and where the hell are you ultimately taking me?"
"Well, my old friend, some disturbing news was dropped in my lap by an operative we have in Germany."
"Operative? I know nothing of this operative, Joe. Why?"
"The operation was so risky and far-fetched, no one thought it could ever possibly work. But it did."
"So how long has this spy been in Hitler's midst?"
"Not in his presence, but placed on a highly secretive research team. To be exact, on their secret weapons projects. There is no doubt about it, those crazy Nazi bastards are up to no good. Something called the Wunderwaffe, a super weapon. Is this weapon atomic, like Albert? Is this...
Jake's voice is gravelly.
Is this weapon atomic, like our breakthrough?
The last contact we had from our spy was garbled, and some of it made no sense.
What do you mean it made no sense?
Talk of time travel, The Walking Dead. Most of it was garbage and unusable.
Is there any way to extract this agent?
Plans are being made now. The one thing we did get out of this message was in 3 months' time they would launch a strike against U.S. soil. That was a month ago, and we haven't had contact with our agent since.
A month ago? So you're telling me we only have 2 months left to stop this from happening?
Quiet down, Jake. The brass has a master plan. Why do you think I'm telling you this? I got a job for you.
Does this job involve gratuitous violence?
Absolutely. And stealth.
So, what does this work detail?
I want our agent back, Jake, and I want you to go in and get that agent.
What? Into the heart of Germany? How am I supposed to do that?
Some patience, Christ. The brass has planned a massive invasion of Europe. We're going to use this as the diversion to go in and get those Nazi secrets.
Sounds like just what I'm looking for.
Yeah, your chance to be that war hero, Jake.
So, tell me, my Black Ops friend, how the hell did you get a spy in the Nazi secret weapons projects? Wait, let me guess, you turned one of the scientists.
Let's put it this way, it would have been easier to do that than what actually worked.
Come on, Joe, don't keep me in the dark like this.
To avoid his colleague's questions, Joe shifted the conversation.
I hope you like flying, Jake. Love it, Joe.
That brings us to the answer for your next question, Jake. Where are we ultimately going? Let's try it in Joe's voice this time. Hang on. No, I need some tea.
That brings us to the answer to your next question, Jake.
No, that's Jake's voice. Back again.
That brings us to the answer for your next question, Jake. Where are we ultimately going? Well, before you can go on this mission, you'll need some training on a new piece of hardware, hence the trip. We're traveling to a remote landing strip just south of Roswell. The Air Force has developed a miniature flying machine capable of night flight, and you're going to have to learn how to fly it.
Sounds like another high-stakes role, Joe. What is it, a gyroplane?
No, it's more like a flying kite.
Look, Jake, either you want it or not, I can always find a replacement.
No, Joe, I'll take it. But I want in on this new Men in Black program if I make it back alive.
Shit, you make it back alive without spy, I'll bring you into the darkness of our world.
So come on, Joe, if I'm going to do this for you, you got to tell me how you did it.
Did what?
You sly bugger trying to avoid the real question.
Okay, but this goes no further than this table.
Joe fills Jake in on the secrets of the newly formed CIA and other Black Ops programs. How they do things and the lengths they will go to. The conversation lasted for 20 minutes. Their dinner completed as the time passed.
Plastic surgery? Wow, I never believed that would be possible.
Neither did we, and that's why I said a long shot, Jake.
And nobody caught on to this spy, this look-alike?
Some close calls and near misses, but yeah.
The two men finished the last sips of their drinks and walked towards and out of the door. The conversation continues as they cross the dusty parking lot and enter the car. The two officials discuss the details of the plan as the tail lights from their vehicle fade into the desert night. The future of these two men would be drastically different. Little did they know that their backwards meeting was the beginning of covert operations that would witness the most amazing UFO events in the world's history. In the not-too-distant future, one would put on a black suit, and the other would achieve what so many war heroes get. Either way, both men would disappear from history without a trace. Chapter 16. Zombies. Truth is stranger than fiction. Seeger spent the last few months observing his generals and Dr. Eckert as much as they were observing everybody else. He knew reconnaissance was his best defense. He had to be careful playing this game. If he got noticed, he might be the one getting shot. The first thing he started doing was checking on Surik every so often. Not only to make sure he was all right, but it offered an opportunity to snoop around Eckert's labs and notes. Surik, against his will, was forced to work within the confines of this dungeon. The boy was glad to see the colonel. Remembrance of a place he wanted to go to as soon as possible.
"Sir, am I glad to see you."
"And me you, Surik."
"Colonel, when you have some time, we should meet."
"Why? What's up?" Surik moves his eyes in the direction of the SS security detail, confining and protecting the recesses of the cavern. The colonel catches this right away.
"Relax, son, we'll talk later. Meet me in the castle gardens just after dark."
Surik acknowledges with a nod. The colonel examines the red mercury production notes, so as not to bring suspicion to his visit.
"Where's Eckert, Surik?"
"He disappears with General Kamala on a regular basis, sir."
"I wonder what those two are up to."
"Nothing good, sir."
"Okay, I'll see you later. Be careful not to be seen."
"Yes, sir."
The colonel leaves the young scientist in this bizarre environment. Walking down the platform stairs, he comes across an empty office on the second level. The colonel glances around and notices no eyes watching. He quickly ducks in. There, on the top of a small office desk, is a dark green folder. The colonel recognizes the color and its significance.
"Black Ops,"
he says to himself. He sneaks over and sits in the office chair. Slowly, he opens the cover, keeping his eyes always on the doorway and glancing down to read. The colonel learns of things he does not want to know. The first page is on the radiation effects of a particle that can be produced from red mercury. It has the ability to break down atomic bonds in matter. The further he reads, the weirder it gets. One section discussed reanimation of dead tissue. The tests Eckert were performing were beyond crazy. They were nuts. Pages describe particles that move faster than light itself. Seeger read of grotesque human trials. He could not believe what Eckert was doing. If he wasn't worried about Zurich before, he was now. Seeger turned the next page to a title typed in bold red letters. "Zombies." The words stop him from reading.
"What the hell?"
The colonel begins to read the first sentence. No more does a word utter from his lips that steps can be heard coming his way. Quickly, he closes the folder and takes the opportunity to follow a leaving security detail out of the lab unnoticed. On his way back to the castle, Seeger contemplates the information he viewed at Eckert's lab. It started the wheels turning. What was the Wunderwaffe going to be? Maybe the atomic bomb was a ruse, a decoy. Perhaps the weapon was much more horrifying than he ever imagined. The last word he read was zombies. What was it? Code name? The puzzling thing, or perhaps the disturbing fact, was the experiments and radiation effects for reanimation of dead tissue that he'd read prior to this, and the massive amount of research Eckert accumulated on red mercury's effect on living tissue and dead alike. Was the super weapon going to be designed to destroy an entire nation's population? Turn them all into the walking dead?
"That's madness."
"Impossible," he says out loud. Finally, he is back with Helga enjoying tea in their favorite study. "So, is Surik going to be okay?" "I'm worried, Helga. Eckert and Kamala can't be trusted. No one is safe around them. I could tell the kid is scared." "What time are you going to meet him?"
"Just after dark, 8 p.m. or so."
Seeger tells his lover everything. What he read, what he saw, what he felt.
She knew it all. The hours passed quickly, and before they knew it, the time came for Seeger's secret rendezvous. He slips away unnoticed, thanks to the aid of Helga. He creeps through the gardens, looking and listening to his anticipated guest. He soon realizes the chances of being noticed by passing security details is quite likely, so the colonel decides to lay in wait. He finds a perch, some place he can see everything. He makes no noise, watches and waits. Minutes turn to hours, and still no Surik. Seeger waits a little longer and then descends from his nest. I wonder where that kid is. The worry sets in, and he sneaks back to Hilda. The worry sets in as he sneaks back to Helga. Chapter 17, The Ruse. While Seeger and Helga wait in worry back at Castle Camlar, Camlar stands next to Eckert on a four-story roost. Master and dog gaze on a dozen prisoners being led to the center of Eckert's lair.
Have you told the Führer yet? Eckert asks.
If I value my life, I won't tell him anything, Camlar responds.
Unless we can replace the uranium destroyed at Parimunda, I cannot complete a nuclear device.
That's why I'm letting you try this, Doctor. I need an alternative weapon to deliver something that may serve our purpose better.
Kill only the enemy and keep their assets, sir?
Yes, that would work.
We don't need uranium. The power of the Vril is a weapon by itself.
I have discovered things, Kamala, that I had not thought possible. Like what? The doctor's attention is diverted by the actions occurring beneath them.
9-9, I want them in 3 circles, various radiuses, from the chamber.
The technicians hurry to comply.
Zurich, load the test chamber with the red mercury, Eckert screams out.
Again, Zurich finds himself not wanting to be there nor witness what was about to happen. Unfortunately, his skills doomed him to this fate. Over the last year and a half, he ended up with the most knowledge of red mercury, how to make it, and what was possible. 2 weeks ago, Kamla ordered him to serve under Eckert until the Vril weapon was finished. Because of Kamla's situation, Surik found himself confined and isolated. He had become a prisoner without knowing it. Moved from the tranquility of his room under the castle's roof, he is now forced to sleep in the confines of Eckert's lair. A cot set up for him and several other technicians in the deep recesses of the cave. Only the promise of a job well done to return him to his friends, promised by a man no one trusts. Kamala lied to all. How do you think he was put in charge of the Nazis' weapons program? The young officer puts the last parts of his radiation suit on. His large rubber gloves hold a large crucible, filled with the purplish liquid metal. Carefully, he walks with his cargo extended far in front. Other technicians run to the test chamber. They unlash and throw open the door. Surik crouches and enters the lead coffin. He places the crucible on the center stand and exits as quickly as possible. They lock the door with the massive hinge latched.
Ready, sir?
A worker calls up. The whines and cries of the human guinea pigs echo off the cavern's wall. For the sick Kamla and Eckert, it's music to their ears. While the workers are repulsed, the two dark lords of the Nazi weapons program savor the anticipation of the horror to come. The hum of the massive transformers feeding the test chamber vibrates through Surik's body. He recently discovered that red mercury will release unknown physical particles when exposed to alternating electric and magnetic fields. When the mad doctor was made privy to this information, his sick mind consumed him. Eckert came up with a new way to release those magical particles. Before you knew it, Eckard had converted his test chamber into a production tool for elementary particles. Particles that move faster than light. Others move through materials with no effects, and then there were those that did things that nightmares are made of. The countdown begins. Over a loudspeaker, Eckert's voice rings out.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Throw the switch!
Zurich forces himself to do this deed. He pulls the main electrical breaker into contact position with all his might. The lights go dim throughout the corridors in Eckert's cavern, and then they begin to flicker occasionally. The test chamber begins to illuminate a bluish glow, smoothly changing to violet, then to a bright green. This lasts for about 10 minutes before the effects are seen. The first inner circle of concentration camp prisoners begin to scream due to an extreme heat build-up deeper in their inner body cells. The first inner circle of concentration camp prisoners begin to scream due to an extreme heat build-up deep in their inner body cells. The other circles of test subjects scream in turn due to sheer panic. The glow emanating from the test chamber's portholes slowly creeps forward. Just prior to engulfing the first row of people, their bodies stiffen and convulse grossly. Faster and faster, appearing possessed, and then as if their bodies change to a dark vapor and burst violently, dissipating into nothingness. The onlookers stand in amazement and awe.
My God, Eckert, what's happening?
The radiation causes the atomic bonds to dissociate from one another,
Eckert screamed out.
Wait, General, you haven't seen nothing yet.
The two stand silent, once again watching, anticipating. Zurek looks up to Eckert. He can see him standing there with the reflection of the events beaming back at him off Eckert's mirrored goggles. Zurek's heart jumped when the doctor looks directly at him, like he knew he was being watched.
Kill the power!
Zurek runs for the switch. Grabbing it, he must use one leg to pry with enough force to disconnect it. The generators and transformers wind down. The collapsing magnetic fields push the glowing wave outwards. It washes over the rest of the prisoners like a wave, causing them to fall to the cement floor. Their bodies fall like dead weights, and the cavern fills with a rain of gory thuds. Zurich turns to see. It hits his shoulder first, like a baseball bat. Then, burning through his body, he collapses, and so do all his comrades. Kamala and Eckert remain above the radiation, safe and secure. The wave's strength grew ever weaker with each inch it expanded outwards. Zurich was lucky. By the time the wave got to him, it was no longer deadly. Little did he know that something worse than death awaited him and his comrades.
Shit!
What? Those were good men. We could have used him.
Kamala peers downwards.
They're okay, see? They're getting up. Good, strong Germans. No, General, they're not okay. The experiment results are not complete yet.
Eckert picks up a nearby radio.
Guards, get in here.
Zurich recovers to his knees to see a dozen SS soldiers file in through the entrance doors. He's disoriented, confused, and sick to his stomach. He can hear Eckert screaming,
"Those first!"
The guards ready their hand pistols, walking up to each surviving prisoner, and with a single pull of the trigger, blowing their brains out. When the killing is done, Eckert gives the last of his orders before dispersing his assassin.
"Puts them in cell 6 and locks the door. After you're done with that, get those researchers and put them in cell 3.
Zurich fills with panic when he feels the hands of two guards grabbing his arms and lifting him to his feet.
"No, no, I'm okay, I'll be okay."
He keeps whispering into this unconsciousness.
"No, no, I'm okay.
I'll be okay. He keeps whispering this into unconsciousness. Eckert and Kamla stay high and safe. They turn to one another and the realization of what just happened sinks in. Eckert, we got replacements for those scientists, right?
Unfortunately, General, we don't.
The General leans his head and his body over the rail, shaking his head and mumbling,
"You've got to be kidding me. You crazy. You crazy bastard. What the hell are we supposed to do now?"
"Plan our escape, sir."
"What did you say? That's treason, Doctor."
"We're all dead anyway, General. Treason or not, you know this war is lost, and even if we had the weapon, the Allies would be here too soon to launch. Face facts, sir. It's time to bail."
Shocked by the Doctor's words and perhaps the realization that he knew the Doctor was right, Kamala responds, "It sounds like, to me, it sounds to me like you have a plan, Doctor."
"Yes, I do, sir."
"Well, let me hear it." The Doctor speaks in parables so that the General will understand. He tells a story similar to Alice in Wonderland. He talks of tunnels through time and space, places of wonder to escape to, parallel worlds where the Nazis rule. By the time Eckert's done, Kamala is dizzy with the possibilities. Eckert the genius and Kamala the planner. He puts to work setting the ruse. He would maintain the appearance that the real weapon would be delivered as scheduled, stall until the Allies crashed the gates of Berlin. Then he and his minion would escape under the cover of bombs. No one would suspect anything. It's the perfect con. The General and Doctor descend the stairways to the testing floor. "Is it safe, Doctor?"
"The radiation effects dissipate almost instantly, with no residuals remaining."
As the General's foot hit the cold cement floor, a startling sound comes from Cell 6. The General responds,
"What the hell was that?"
"Ah, they're waking up," excitedly.
Eckert sighs. "What do you mean, they're waking up?"
"Come, let me show you."
They walk into the darkest corners of the cave to view the horrors. Chapter 18. A Secret Shared Among Friends. The days blended together like a blur of madness. The pages of the calendar turned like leaves in a brisk breeze. Before the group knew it, 1944 turned to 1945, and the launch of the Wunderwaffe was planned. The clock was ticking, and the Nazi Party knew, now more than ever, that they had to strike. The Wunderwaffe was not the bell, it was part of it. But the true weapon to be delivered was a weapon that would bring the Allied forces to their knees. Only a privileged few knew of the exact design or application of such a weapons platform. Even Seeger was not told whether the weapon was a bomb, a death ray, or what it was. The Colonel managed to put some of the pieces of the Führer's plan together. The realization came with a warning from the Nazi Colonel. One night in early March, Seeger gathered his closest friends and colleagues to a very private dinner engagement. It was a night in which Sporenberg and Kamla had left to Berlin for a meeting with the Führer, the only break from their ever-watchful eye in months. Seeger had anxiously waited for just such a time, much to discuss with these people who had become his family over the last year and a half. The night was clear, and after dinner, Seeger invited Otto, Helga, and the newest member of their family, Kurt Davis, to a second-floor balcony. Since Alfred's death, Kurt seemed to be a surrogate fill-in for the group. Many times they accidentally called out Alfred to get his attention. Seeger picked this balcony for a reason. It overlooked the whole entrance to the castle grounds. You could see all around and underneath if given the effort. The Colonel locked the door behind him, confining all to the outside. "Please, everyone, sit. Is everyone comfortable?"
Yes, sir,
each reply. Surik is unable to join us. Seems his duties keep him very busy and isolated. The group notices Seeger suspiciously checking out the grounds, looking up and under the balcony.
What's wrong, Rudolf?
Nothing, Helga. Making sure there are no prying eyes or ears. Let's get started. He sits in front of his family, in a position as to keep a view on all the available surroundings. I thought I'd gather everybody here and enlighten you on the new art of war and betrayal. This should be fun, Otto replies. Not fun, Otto. Terrifying.
What do you mean, Rudolf?
Helga, I brought you all here to let you know we're all in grave danger. The group sits in silence as the colonel explains. You all know that the war is lost for Germany. Whether you want to admit it or not, our last hope is the Wunderwaffe. We all know it's a race. The Allies are knocking on our door, and still Eckert has not delivered this real weapon. Details of the Bell are still at least a month away from completion. I fear that the Allies will overrun our complexes in the near future. If they do before we can launch the Wunderwaffe, it's over. That will be the final nail in the coffin.
The fact that these complexes are secret won't help, Colonel?
Maybe, Otto, but how secret are they? I don't know. Sporenberg and Kamala have been looking for something since they got here, and I think it's a spy.
A spy, Rudolf? What makes you say that?
Their actions and questions, Helga. I can tell they trust no one. Have you not asked yourself why they no longer have you involved in their private meetings?
Are you saying they think I'm a spy, Rudolf?
Helga, I don't think so. But for all I know, they think I'm a spy. What I'm saying is you're in the same boat as us. Your fate the same.
Do you know our fate, sir?
Not know, Kurt. Guarantee. The group waits for Seeger to finish. He takes a deep drag off his cigarette and exhales slowly. Helga loved this view, her lover silhouetted in a shimmering, soft-smoked glow. The SS will destroy all the secrets here. They'll kill us all, and Sporenberg will be the man to carry out the orders. We must be prepared. I care for all of you deeply, and cannot or will not see us meet this end. I don't know when it will take place, but I do know every day the Allies march closer, the percentages of this becoming a reality increase exponentially. We must protect each other, and what I'm about to show you must be kept completely secret. If we can't do this, it will not guarantee our survival. They finish their brandies and cigars, feeling safe and relaxed for the first time in a long time. Everyone laughs and jokes. Even the colonel jokes about the state of matters at hand. The long period of separation from reality in the above-ground world has twisted all their humours. Acceptance had overcome them all. The colonel, feeling no pain and figuring tomorrow is guaranteed to no man, especially for this group of individuals, gently holds Helga in his arms. She welcomes it and snuggles her firm back into Zika's midsection. Her head tilts up and back. They gaze into each other's eyes. Helga's hand reaches up and strokes Seeker's chiseled face. A small, gentle kiss is exchanged publicly for the first time.
Hey, you two, get a room, Kurt blurts out.
Yeah, there must be at least 100, Otto laughs. Everyone knew Helga and Seeger felt this way about each other. They were happy for them. It gave them all hope in such dark times. Seeger finds time to unlock and release his friends from their second floor perch. They descend to the main dining room and to further socialize over a fantastic German traditional meal and more brandy. They are all intoxicated by this point.
Follow me, you guys, Seeger calls out.
He grabs Helga's hand and leads her out of the main dining room. The rest automatically follow.
Okay, time to show you the life-saving secret I talked to you about earlier.
Where are we going, Rudolf?
Patience, my dear.
When I was a boy, I had a friend who lived in this castle. He and I found the passage that no one else ever knew about. It must have been built when the castle was first constructed in the 1500s. The Fellowship of Researchers now stand in the spring moonlight, the stars brilliant and vast above their heads as the Colonel leads them through the castle grounds. Seeger further explains how he and his boyfriend friend accidentally stumbled upon this secret passage while playing in the castle gardens one hot August night. My friend's name was Hans. I remember how we were running through the center of the garden's maze playing hide-and-seek. These hedges and granite stoneworks were magical to us kids. Hans was a clumsy kid. I remember him tripping and falling. He reached out to catch himself grabbing this lion statue hind paw. Seeger reaches down and pushes with a great deal of force. Man, that must have not been open since I was a kid. Stand back, everyone. The entire granite base and statue begins to creep backwards. Look, guys, the counterweight mechanism, the Colonel points. They all turn 180 degrees to view a large stone pillar that has tilted slightly. My God, what's that awful smell? Helga gasps as she covers her nose and mouth. An indescribable, damp, pungent odor fills the air. Stale air, Helga, Otto answers. It hasn't been open since I was a boy some 35 years ago. It's dark and cramped, so be careful. Helga, hold on tight to me. Okay, Rudolf. Seeger crouches slightly, leading Helga by her small hand into the passageway. He had bought a small pocket light for the occasion. The passage is narrow and low, the walls rough and damp. Rudolf, I don't like this. It's fine, Helga, we need to know this. Stay close, I won't let anything happen to you. She relaxes somewhat, and the claustrophobic atmosphere seems to be less overwhelming. The five stand in the cramped space. Otto, next to you is a lever. Pull it as hard as you can. Yes, Colonel. The young, skinny lad grabs it with his two hands and pulls with all his might.
I can't get it, sir. It won't budge.
Kurt, give him a hand. The two now wrestle with the lever. It lets go and the two men stumble back to the opposite wall.
You okay, Otto? Kurt?
Yes, Helga, just clumsy. The two laugh.
The giant lion statue begins to move shut. The long, drawn-out sounds of grinding stone fill the bowels of the chamber. Each member of the group, except Helga, pull out their lighters to illuminate the dark passageway. It's a hard walk. The passageway elevates upwards to the exit with the slope of the land. Some three-quarters of a mile in length, it took the group 25 minutes to negotiate the passage. After a long, fearful, and intoxicated journey, the passage opens up to a small cave-like room.
Colonel, it's a dead end, squeals Kurt.
Calm down, Kurt, Seeger orders. Watch and remember. The Colonel's frame slithers through the group, his hands, scarred and rough from injuries sustained in battle, feel along the wall's edge. Here it is. See, you guys? Now, push. Here and hard. A click can be heard. The smooth stone wall face in front of the Nazi colonel seems to be unchanged. He stands. Watch this. He takes Helga by the hand once again and leads her into the seemingly solid rock wall. The remaining men stand in the dark cavern.
Holy shit, where did they go?
It's an optical illusion, Kurt.
What do you mean, Otto?
Smoke and mirrors, like everything else around here. Otto approaches the wall face. He extends his hands out and feels.
Ah, see you guys?
Otto motions as to push his hand into the wall.
Man, that's so wild, Kurt calls out.
Otto's arm appears to vanish into the walls.
How's that even possible, Kurt gasps.
Angles, buddy. Otto slides at an angle and disappears through the wall face.
Wait for me, Kurt calls out.
He runs up to the wall. Kurt can hear from the other side Otto's voice. Feel the wall towards the corner. Hey, Kurt, follow me. He meets up on the other side with his friend. The two men stand at the base of a narrow stairway. Steep is the climb to the top. When they reach the exit, they find the silhouettes of Seeger and Helga standing side by side at the mouth of a cave 25 feet away.
Over here,
Seeger shouts out. He motions for the three to join them. Took you guys long enough, Helga jokes.
Sorry, Helga.
Relax, I'm just joking with you, Otto. Sorry, boys, but I needed you to figure out that for yourselves. Follow me, I'll show you the rest of the way to a safe hidden spot. They follow the colonel into the woods. He weaves in and out of trees to the edge of a cliff, overlooking the mountain slopes. It's a bird's eye view. Like an eagle's nest, they can see everything. The colonel instructs them to get here as quick as possible. When it happens, it will come unexpectedly. What will, sir? When Sporenberg's assassination squad descend on us. What should we do, Rudolph? Get here as quick as possible? Stay low and unseen. Get to this cliff so you can see who's coming. Surrender to no one but the Allied forces. Do not surrender to any German forces. Why, Colonel? Kurt asks. They'll kill you on sight, Kurt. We've all seen and know too much of these Nazi secrets. They stay, studying the landscape. The Colonel outlining every detail for them to survive. The secret, tucked away deep in the recesses of their minds. They hold tight to this information like a security blanket. It helps them fall asleep when they return to the safety of their beds. Chapter 19. A spy, I tell you.
A spy, I tell you!
Has all General Kammler heard spout from Sporenberg's mouth ever since the first bombing of the Bell. Kammler had his doubts about this. These locations, these projects so secret he doubted anyone knew what the Nazis were really doing there. Besides, it wasn't an entire air squadron that attacked. Only one lone bomber that actually got shot down. It hardly seemed planned or well executed. Like Kammler says, shit happens. Sporenberg was a different story. A believer in that perfect paranoia was perfect awareness. The event of the bombing to him seemed so unplanned but yet achieved such success to be totally circumstantial. There had to be more to it. The fact that Hitler was just attacked filled the SS with distrust. Everyone was watching everyone. Sporenberg even had his doubts about General Kammler's behavior as of recently. Lots of time spent with Dr. Eckert. The thing about Eckert was that even Sporenberg was scared of him. In fact, every member in the Nazi party was terrified of the guy and the knowledge he possessed in his head. This is what puzzled Sporenberg. Why on earth would anyone hang out with him? He knew Kammler was overseeing the production of the Vril weapon, but also understood the general's administrative position. Kammler would much rather be sitting in a luxurious office drinking, eating, and laughing. He wasn't the character to roll up his sleeves and physically pitch in. More of a watcher, a planner, and this is what worried Sporenberg. What were Kammler and Eckert planning? Sporenberg was a tactician trained by the top military personnel, and he knew that a trap must be set and sprung to catch his prey. First, he needed more proof of conspiracy or conspiracies. How to get this? That was the question pulsating through his mind. Sporenberg finishes his steaming cup of coffee and walks into his Berlin office and closes the door behind him. Here he remains locked away, making plans of his own. On the slopes of the now called Spook Hill, Helga and Seeger stand side by side. They enjoy the mornings together. The birds chirping and singing, the freshness of the cool morning air rushing across their faces. This morning they stare in an easterly direction, not at the rising sun, but at a dark, ominous sky carrying an approaching storm. My, Rudolph, that's one ugly-looking sky. I love spring thunderstorms, don't you, Helga? I love the rain, Rudolph. It's the thunder that gets to me. I remember as a little girl on the prairies, it frightened me so terribly. Oops. I love the... Sorry, Helga. She just turned into the American spy. I love the rain, Rudolph. It's the thunder that gets to me.
I remember as a little girl on the prairies, it frightened me so terribly.
Rudolph wraps his left arm around Helga's waist and pulls her close. We'll cuddle near a fireplace when the storms hit. Now I can't wait.
Sieger moves from her side, gently hugging her midsection from behind. He rests his chin on her slender shoulder. She relaxes and enjoys the posture, snuggling into Sieger's firm chest.
I still can't believe it's 1945, Rudolph. I thought this war would be over 2 years ago.
It will be over soon, my dear. The cards from both sides are on the table now. A winner will be chosen soon.
What do you mean, chosen?
By the gods of war.
What gods, Rudolph?
I don't know, Helga, but I've seen them at work on the battlefield. I saw the perfect timing, the exact circumstances that had to play out to take one's life. Why a shell would land in a foxhole and kill everyone but him. How a piece of shrapnel could graze one's head and remove the others. Many times, Helga, I let go of myself to march into battle and left my fate to these unforeseen forces. To me, they are gods, and they do exist. Meanwhile, back in Berlin, a ring of an office phone echoes through Sporenberg's office.
Man, I hate that thing.
He gets out of his chair and unwillingly walks to answer his summon.
Yeah, who is it?
Private Lubber, sir.
And what's up, Private?
He told me to keep an eye out for any information regarding enemy intelligence, sir. I think I may have come across something of interest.
I'll be right there.
He runs from his office with the excitement of a schoolboy, his belly bouncing as he descends down the flight of stairs. The clerk's office lies in the bowels of the SS security building. They call it the dungeon. Not that they torture people there. It's just dark and the air is damp like a dungeon. The general comes crashing through the clerk's office door.
Show me what you have, Private.
A sinister smile smears, staring at the young clerk.
Sir, a transmission from the Allied bases in Normandy to a contact in the Argonne Forest.
Here, give me that, son.
The general raises a glass lens to his right eye and begins to read.
Dark Rider to Raven, come in, stop. Raven here, stop. Has location of superweapon been confirmed, stop. Negative, little Kitty not responding, stop. Make rendezvous with Kitty at base of Spook Hill, stop. When, stop. Leave immediately via the Rhine route. We'll send further instructions, stop.
Sporenberg's eyes lit up.
We've got them. I knew there was a spy. Spook Hill, Owl Mountain's nickname. Only a small circle of individuals know this name. We must set a trap for this intelligence agent, Private.
Keep monitoring the radio channel. I need to know exactly when our guest will arrive.
Yes, General, sir.
Pleased with the present development, Sporenberg turns and runs from the dungeon. He has more plans to make. The trap must be escape-proof. Who or what was Little Kitty? How long has this been going on, and what do the Allies know? Only their expected guest would be able to answer these questions. Mid-morning came fast for Sieger and his research team. Underground, one loses touch with the world above. For that matter, one loses total track of time. Hours tend to pass by like they were minutes. Some days they would not even see the light of day. The Allies were deeply embedded into the coastlines of Europe and marching towards Berlin. They worked day and night on the Bell, the drive system, the navigation and power systems complete. The Bell was ready to launch and deliver the superweapon. They could get the call at any minute. All they needed to finish this masterpiece of destruction was the Vril weapon itself.
Sir, when do we see the Wunderwaffe?
Hopefully soon, Kurt. Eckert was supposed to deliver a workable weapon weeks ago.
I'm surprised Kamala hasn't had him whipped yet.
That surprises me too, Kurt. Makes me wonder what's going on.
What do you mean, Colonel?
Maybe the weapon will be launched using another delivery method. It's possible all our work was a decoy.
A ruse, sir?
Possibly. Only time will reveal the truth.
Sir?
I have not seen Zurich the last few weeks.
Where is he?
Kamala assigned him to Eckert's division 2 weeks ago. I tried to help the kid, but no go. Kamala transferred him on the request of Dr. Eckert. I've been trying to get him back. Eckert promised he would return him safe and sound to us.
Sound to us.
You trust that, sir? I have no choice but my friend. Orders, remember? Unfortunately, I remember, sir. Talking about orders, Kurt, I need you to find Otto. When you see him, tell him to gas the baby up. Start charging the bell with a new batch of red mercury. I want the bell moved to the henge by 2 p.m. today.
Yes, sir.
I'll be at the castle. Seeger quickly exits the monstrous lab like he had some place to go, and fast. Across the forest and over the local brook, Helga stands alone on the stone stairs of Castle Xess, her eyes focused on the massive rolling cloud front that approaches. The sky is now dark, and the mid-morning that is usually bright and sunny is now dark blue and overcast. She can feel an unexplained anxiety building in her. She knows why. Orders to carry out. She does not want to do what she is commanded to do, but knows she has to. She has been avoiding contact with her superiors as long as she could, but could not put them off any longer. She gives one last glance at the rolling sky, and as she enters a castle, a low, thunderous vibration trembles through Helga's body. Her body jerks in a moment of fear.
I hate thunder.
She races across the vast expanses of the castle, up 5 flights of stairs to the communications room. She's about to open the door and is startled by the doorknob turning without her effort. Helga takes a step back in surprise. She gasps,
"My God, Otto, you scared the living daylights out of me."
"Sorry, Helga, I didn't mean to."
"What are you doing up there?"
"I'm trying to get a hold of my father in Berlin. I was trying to get routed through dispatch, but to no avail, Helga. I spent all day on that damn thing and still couldn't get a hold of anyone." "What about you, Helga? What are you doing?"
"Seeker wants me to tell the brass we're ready to launch the bell."
"Shit, that reminds me, I've got to get to Complex A right now." Running down the hallway, Otto turns back. "Sorry, Helga, got to go."
Alone at last, she sighs softly. A frame disappears behind a closing door.
Otto's in luck. Running out of the castle, he sees a military jeep parked across the way. He runs to it, immediately searching for the keys. He finds them in the ashtray.
"Right on."
He jumps in and speeds away in his newly discovered toy. He speeds down the long winding path, wind blowing in his face and through his hair. Otto's only shaking from his childish actions by a near miss with a military transport vehicle around the last bend.
"Phew, that was close."
He turns the bend to view the hidden entranceway to Complex A. He drives under the camouflage netting and into the dark entrance of the tunnels leading to his destination. A military transport sways side to side after a near collision with another vehicle on the roadway to Castle Kazis. Seeger hangs on tight.
"Man, who was that crazy bastard?"
A lone private reaches out to pull Seeger to safety.
"Thanks, kid."
"No problem, sir."
"You get that guy's license plate?"
The truck fills with laughter. This truck was heading to the Henge. The next 24 to 48 hours were going to determine the future of the Reich, and everyone knew it. Everybody on edge, from the privates on the truck to the generals gathering at the various complexes. As the transport slows to negotiate the turnoff leading to the Henge, Seeger hops off. He is soon left alone walking the winding road He is soon left alone walking on the winding roadway the mile or so to where his passion lays, Helga. The way darkened by the weather, the air calm, no breeze. The leaves on the trees seem to be turned under and lying low, a sure sign of an immense boomer on the way. Seeger could feel the energy building in the air.
He claimed he could feel the thunderstorm coming. Something to do with the electrical static in the atmosphere. It filled him with nervousness, and mixed with the do-or-die scenario facing the motherland in the moments of peace and quiet he now experiences might be the last ones in his life. He slows his steps, breathes deeper, and stares at things longer. He could feel the stress and anxiety of his life wash away. He stops for a moment to appreciate the peace. It's short-lived. The roar of a military convoy arriving at the lower complexes crushes his sanctum. It was great while it lasted, he said to the trees and wind. Seeger's mind returns to his obsession. His pace quickens, and soon he sees the castle's towers. His thoughts constantly on Helga. He was worried for her safety. He wanted to be close to her at all times, in this place that was impossible, and that fact added to the colonel's stresses. Nothing he could do about it, just accept it and move on. Soon he would be with her again, only a few moments away. He begins to run the last short distance of his journey, peering skyward. His run stops just short of the stone stairway leading to his lover. His eyes open wide. I've never seen that before. The clouds are moving from all directions to a center point directly above one of Eckert's labs. Or so it appears that way. The movement slow and spiraling in nature. Bizarre, he says to himself as he walks up the stairs, displaying a queer look. At the base of Spook Hill, there lies an airstrip. It's small and consists only of short-cropped grass on solid dry land. Hardly ever used, only during the arrival of dignitaries. Tonight it would see more traffic than it had ever done before. The first plane to bounce across its rough surface carried General Kamala.
God damn it, I spilled my drink. My shirt ruined. I want that pilot's head.
General, it was unavoidable. The runway is just a field. I brought several new shirts and uniforms so you could look your best, sir.
Thank you, Private. I got a feeling you were going to go places, young man.
The young private waits for the plane to stop. He mops up the mess and helps the general change before exiting the plane.
Where to, General? What do you mean, where to? I don't see a car or a limousine. What are we supposed to do? Walk?
Good point, sir. The private removes his carrying pack and lays it on the fresh green grass. He kneels beside it and quickly opens the main flap.
What's going on there, kid?
I have the new portable long-distance radio unit, sir. I'll radio the security office and tell them we've arrived to send a car. Kamala looks in all directions. He can see the plane that delivered them to their destination. The small 8-passenger biplane is just lifting off the field surface and steeply climbing into the dark skies. Turning back towards the private, the general takes 2 steps. His eyes blacken. On second thoughts, I'll walk. The general's hand moves sharply to his hip, and the SS Luger that waits for his master's command is placed at the private's head. The private only felt the pressure of the gun barrel against his skull for a heartbeat.
Sorry, son. No one can know I'm here yet.
Kamala, vibrating from the sick thrill of taken life, reaches down to grab his victim's feet. The young man's body heavy and limp as Kamala struggles to drag it the 50 feet to the thick underbrush of the mountain's forest. There, that should do. He brushes his hands together to wipe off the dirt from the kid's shoes. The general runs back, grabs all the luggage, and tosses that into the underbrush as well. He then takes off running through the woods to God knows where. The skies over Berlin are dark, too. The storm front massive, covering the central area of Europe. There was no getting away from the wrath of what was happening. Sporenberg is asleep at his desk. He grew weary of waiting for Private Lubber's call. The general's feet are resting on his oak desk, his hands folded behind his head, and the deep rumbling snores exhaling from his slobbering mouth. The phone rings, jolting to the man. The phone rings, jolting the man to his feet. Confused, the general does not pick up the receiver until the fourth ring.
Hello?
General, we have what you have been waiting for, sir.
A location? Time?
Yes, sir.
Get my plane ready, Private. We'll leave as soon as possible.
Yes, sir. Before the private knew it, he was standing in the rain with lightning flashing directly over him. The droplets of water poured Lubber's face. He tried to shield his eyes using his hands. From their small single-plane hangar at the far end of the runway, the private views a historic sight. The entire Luftwaffe force spread out as far as his eyes can see. My lord, what a sight. The base was alive with thousands of people. Mechanics, pilots, you name it. Then just another private strolls by. Hey, what's going on?
The Allies are coming. The entire Air Force is being mobilized.
Mobilized for what?
To defend Berlin. I've got to go.
Lubber stood there, watching his comrade run towards the mass gathering of planes. The private sees Kamler's limo pulling up to the side of the hangar.
He's finally here.
The private runs to greet his superior. Upon meeting the car, Lubber goes to open the door for the general. Instead of the general, the first two of the largest men the private ever laid hands on, exit the vehicle. Lubber steps back to give them room. General Kamler soon follows.
Lubber, it looks like the shit's going to hit the fan soon.
Yes, sir.
The group of four fight the wind and rain to the front of the hangar. While walking, they continued their conversation.
Is the plane fueled and ready?
Yes, sir.
With this traffic, it'll be 20-30 minutes before we lift off. We must get to Spook Hill fast or trap will be spoiled.
I can't believe the Allies are so bold as to try and pull off such an operation, sir.
Whatever you call it, Wellubber, it's working for them. They got our back against the wall.
I'll brief you on the details of their plans on the plane, sir.
Sounds good, Lubber. Let's going. Let's get going. The clock is ticking. No time to waste.
The four board the transport plane. The pilots start the two radial turbocharged engines and slowly pulls out the hangar. The passengers can hear the raindrops pound against the plane's sheet metal skin. A nerve-wracking sound, especially for those with a fear of flying. The two massive guards never speak. Nor does Kamler ever say who or what they are there for. The private, realizing what he got himself into, begins to read the general the Allied plans. At 10 p.m. tonight, a single-engine ultralight plane will land at the base of Owl Mountain using an existing German runway under the cover of darkness. Here they will rendezvous with a hidden Allied agent for an extraction operation.
They want their spy back, do they?
It appears that way, sir, but I think they'll be after whatever information this spy offers.
With the mobilization of our Air Force, sir, the Allies will probably use mass bombing attacks to try to distract us.
Cover, you're not as dumb as you look, Lubber. Just kidding. Lighten up, we may all be dead soon.
The private, not sure how to take the General's attempt at humor, remains quiet. This time, the General fills the private in on their plan.
See those two giant bastards back there, Lubber?
How could you miss them, sir?
We're going to set the trap the second we arrive.
When the plane lands, Lubber, those two men will exit the plane while it's still on the move and then vanish into the forest. Then they'll lie in wait for our guest to arrive. I have no doubt that once he's on the ground, he's ours. We'll continue on to Castle Kzass as to not arouse suspicion.
Don't want to scare our prey away.
No, sir, that would be bad.
Not bad, fucking terrible.
The co-pilot opens the cabin door. General will be leaving shortly.
Thank God, the general replies.
Within several minutes, the passengers hear the engines roar to life, deafening is the sound. Lubber can feel his body suck back into his seat as the plane goes almost vertical at takeoff. It soon climbs into low cloud cover and disappears from sight.
Just need to reposition myself.
Seeger is entering the front castle doors when he sees the object of his thoughts.
Rudolf!
She runs into his waiting arms. Helga embraces him with both arms wrapping around his neck.
I missed you.
I missed you too. They stand in the doorway for several minutes, embracing the security of one another, finally releasing and walking into the recesses of their sanctum. Rudolf, the storm is getting closer. It'll soon be on us, my dear, and it looks like a doozy. Seeger notices Helga is quiet, distant, like something was bugging her. Helga, are you all right? You seem preoccupied with something. The events to come, Rudolf. Tonight we launch the Wunderwaffe. What destruction will that bring? I got a feeling, Helga, we will never launch that thing.
What do you mean?
The Allies are coming tonight. I can feel it. It's in the air. They're going to bomb us back into the Stone Age.
Will we be safe, Rudolf?
I don't know, Helga. I hope. They find a small room to shelter themselves from the world outside. Here they shed the stresses of what could be the last day of their life. It's ecstasy for Seeger, her warm body pressed against his, her lips sweet like honey. He kisses her everywhere she desires and commands. The moments pass, with each moment becoming more intense than the last. Soon moans become screams and chants of desire. She climaxes, shouting his name and clawing at his bulging chest muscles. They stare into each other's eyes and then embrace. Here they remain hidden away from the world for as long as they can. Meanwhile, back at Complex A, Otto and Kurt are hard at work fueling the Bell with red mercury. They are wearing radiation suits that resemble astronauts or some unworldly automaton. Through a mask, a mumbled voice can be heard.
Otto, how much longer?
Another hour or so.
We'd better hurry. Seeger wants the Bell at the Henge by 4 p.m.
I'm going as fast as I can. I don't want to kill us.
No, that would suck.
Kurt, go and start getting a transport truck ready to load the Bell. The minute I'm done, we'll load up and get to the Henge.
The men race to complete their assigned tasks. Soon they're done, and the Bell was about to be reunited with the Henge for the last time in history. By this time, the skies over Spook Hill were filled with clouds reaching 20 to 30,000 feet in altitude. From this monster, a plane drops from its bowels, tossing and bouncing from turbulence and downdrafts. The pilot fights to keep control. It's tough, but he manages to skid the plane onto the runway. The general undoes his seatbelt and makes his way to the cockpit door. He swings it open. Okay, slow this thing to a crawl and taxi close to the forest edge. Go for the far end of the field. Over there. Yes, sir. The pilots execute his plan perfectly. Sporenberg turns and returns to his companion, Lubber.
They're gone already?
I can't believe how fast those monsters move.
I know, impressive.
There, Lubber, our trap is set. We'll continue on and let the events of tonight unfold.
Yes, sir.
Several hours pass before all are gathered at the castle. Sporenberg has called the entire research team into the main assembly hall. It was a roll call to see all who were there.
Wasn't Kamala supposed to be here by now?
I don't know, responds Lover.
I don't know, sir, responds Lover.
Go find out. There's a communications room up on the fifth floor.
The private double times it to his master's command.
Now, what about Eckert?
Seeger,
the general calls out.
Yes, sir. Do you know where our resident crazy is?
Eckert, sir?
No, I don't.
Find him. On second thoughts, send someone else. I'll need you here for later events.
Those words made Seeger's nerves stand on edge. The thought rifles through his mind. Tonight's the night. He's going to kill everyone. With this realization, the colonel knew the war was over. The Bell and the Wunderwaffe would never launch, for that fact never ever existed. They were going to destroy it all. Seeger's only concern became Helga. He sees her across the great hall, and cautiously makes his way to her, whispering into her ear,
"Helga, as soon as you can, find a safe hiding place and go there. Stay from sight until I come find you."
She can tell by the look in Seeger's eyes that the time had come, the moment of his prophecy upon them. Without hesitation, she slips away unseen and unknown to wait for her lover. Sporenborg calls Seeger to his side.
"Colonel, if there is anyone I can trust here, it's you. You're the only one who I know isn't a spy."
"A spy, sir?"
"Yes, Colonel, and we'll soon reveal who it is. We must wait, though."
"What about the launch, sir?"
"I need things to go as planned, Colonel. So let everyone continue as such. You, Colonel, will not leave my side now. Tell your team to get ready for launch."
Seeger belts the orders out and the room explodes into movement. It's soon cleared and all that remains are the General and Colonel. The Colonel is about to ask further questions about this spy, but they are interrupted by Lover running into the room.
"Sir, no one can find Kamala. It's like he's vanished."
"Okay, son, now, calm down. We'll deal with him later. What now, General?"
"We wait, Seeger."
The hours pass slowly like a snail crawling across the edge of a razor blade, slowly cutting deeper and deeper. The discomfort of it is unbearable. Time spent in silence, contemplating each other's thoughts and actions. The thought of Helga and her safety popping into Seeger's head. Is she okay? Worry begins to consume the colonel. The storm now begins to unleash itself. Lightning discharges begin to fill the night sky. The crashing sounds of thunder shake the foundations of the castle. The general rises to his feet and begins to pace back and forth.
"What time is it, Lover?"
10 p.m., sir.
"Should be any time now."
Seeger listens, trying to get an idea of what the general was up to. He didn't have to wait too long before they knew it. The door crashes open and the two Nazi guards enter the room holding a very battered individual. Supporting him from collapsing on the floor by his arms.
"We have him, sir."
"Oh, sorry, monsters."
"We have him, sir."
The monsters drop the agent at the general's feet.
"Well, what do we have here?"
"Sure enough, we watched him fly that little kite and land just like you said he was going to do, Colonel General."
"It looks like the torture already started, Lieutenant."
"No, sir, he tried to escape. The dumb bastard ran into a tree." "Ha ha, good."
"Seeger, where can I interrogate this man?"
"They have an interrogation room in the cellar, General." "Good, take us there." The guards pick up the man, dragging him, crying.
"No, no."
They sickly respond, laughing.
"Yes, yes."
Seeger is repulsed by the sickness. He knew these guards were interrogation experts trained in the art of torture. They were going to cut this guy to pieces. They'd start with his feet and fingers, then start with the filleting of his flesh, all to get what they need, and then so it began. The blood flies and screams echo through the walls. The generals scream questions at the man before the guards would cut off another piece.
"Give us the name." "I said the name."
The prisoner refuses.
"Okay, now the foot."
One guard grabs the man's legs and offers it high in the air for his partner to begin the deed.
The prisoner screaming,
"No! No!"
The guard dangles the knife and once again smiles and sickly says, "Yes, yes." The blade of the knife begins to saw back and forth. The blood pours from the wound. It gets deeper and deeper. Soon the foot only hangs by a thread of flesh. With one more swipe, it falls to the floor with a thud. The prisoner convulses and begins to vomit. "Tie that limb off with some rubber tubing and wake that poor son of a bitch up," the general commands. The masters of torture follow his commands to a T. When the prisoner wakes, he's not so stubborn. In shock and weak from the blood, he begins to give his secrets to Sporenberg. Seeger remains in the background observing, quietly waiting with anxiety, for he knew this man was about to give it all up. He started with the Allied air raids. "They're coming."
"Who's coming?"
"Bombers."
"I don't care about that. The spy. Who are you going to pick up, and who or what is little Kitty?"
The small man tries to fight one last time, but can't. The pain and suffering too great. Then the words that would shock them all slowly and weakly rolled from the angel's mouth. Then the words that would shock them all slowly. No. Sorry. Then the words that would shock them all, slowly and weakly, rolled from the agent's mouth. "Kitty Waters."
"Who the hell is Kitty Waters?"
"An American plant."
"What do you mean, an American plant? Quick talking gibberish and give me a name."
"Helga Wilhelm." The room fell silent. A blank and stunned look came across Sporenberg's face. "Did you hear that, Seeger?" The general turns to view the colonel's reaction, but he was no longer there. Only a slight opening of the door. He vanished. "But where to and why?" Sporenberg asks himself. He refocuses to the matters at hand.
"You go find that bitch now!"
he screams at the lieutenant.
"Yes, sir!"
he responds and runs to get their next victim. "You tell me more about this American plant," Sporenberg calmly says. Before that agent left this world in pieces, Sporenberg knew everything.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.